Supper seemed a positive feast after so many cheerless meals at the convalescent home. That night I was kept awake by the unrelentingly beautiful song of the nightingales, and all my thoughts were of the enigmatic Mary Cavendish. But there was no sign of her in the house the following morning, and it was not until after lunch that she made an appearance.
You can't possibly waste a glorious afternoon like this sitting in the library.
So we set off on a charming walk through the woods and across the fields.
I try to get out as much as I can. It can get quite claustrophobic at times. Two married women shouldn't have to share the same house.
Mrs. Inglethorpe can't be an easy woman to live with.
Oh, don't misunderstand me, Captain Hastings. I have a great affection for Emily. But she does insist on having her own way. And she treats John and Lawrence as if they were still schoolboys. It wasn't too bad until Alfred Inglethorpe came on the scene, but now she won't listen to anyone except darling Alfred. Oh, sometimes I wish...
What do you wish?
No, don't let's talk about it any more. It's much too lovely a day. We'll cut across down to the stream. We might see a kingfisher, but we mustn't be too long. I promised John we'd be back by 5.
Thank God you're here at last. There's the very deuce of a mess. Evie's had a row with Inglethorpe and she's been given her marching orders.
But why? What actually happened?
And apparently she went to the matron... But here she is. She can tell you herself.
Well, I've spoken my mind at any rate.
Evie, this simply can't be true.
It's true enough. I said a few things to Emily she won't forget in a hurry. There's no fool like an old fool, I told her. That man's 20 years younger than you, and don't kid yourself, he's after anything but your money. And why do you think he's spending so much time down by Long Farm? Mrs. Rates is a very pretty woman, and he doesn't go over there just to talk about how our crops are doing.
Good Lord, and what did she say to that?
She said I was a wicked woman to tell such terrible lies about darling Alfred, and the sooner I left the house, the better. So I'm off.
But not now, surely.
This very minute. Do you think you could run me down to the station, Mr. Cavendish?
I'll go and check the times of the train.
At least wait until I've had a word with Emily, Evie. I can't believe this is happening.
Captain Hastings, you're an honest man, I can tell that. Look after my poor Emily if you can. There are a lot of sharks here, all of them. They're only waiting for her to die so they can get their hands on her money. I've protected her as much as I can, but I tremble to think what may happen when I'm gone. Just keep your eyes open, and above all, watch out for that devil, her husband.
Evie went upstairs and brought down her luggage. The Inglethorpes did not appear. As John drove her off down the drive, I noticed Mary going out to meet a tall, bearded man who was evidently heading for the house.
Who's that chap kissing Mary Cavendish's hand?
Oh, that's Dr. Bauerstein. He's staying in the village. He's a London specialist who's apparently come down here to recover from some kind of nervous breakdown.
Is that the chap Mrs. Cavendish said knew so much about poisons?
One of the greatest living experts, so they say. He's a great friend of hers.
I didn't care for the look of him very much. Too many black beards round Stiles. And I cared even less for his being a great friend of Mary's. When John came back from the station, we took a walk through the plantation. As we came to one of the gates, a young gypsy-looking woman, coming in the opposite direction, bowed her head and smiled.
Afternoon.
What an astonishingly pretty girl.
That is Mrs. Rakes.
The woman Evie was trying to warn your mother about.
Exactly.
Will Stiles come to you when your stepmother dies?
It should be mine now, by rights. If my father had only made a decent will, then I shouldn't be so damned hard up.
Nothing's really that bad.
My dear Hastings, I don't mind telling you I'm at my wit's end for money. The mater's always kept us on a pretty tight rein, and she still doles out her allowance as if it were pocket money. So humiliating. I'm a middle-aged married man, for goodness sake. And of course, since the war broke out, she can't think about anything but her bazaars and charities. Darling Alfred is at the centre of it all, of course, and he believes he can twist around his little finger. But I'll be damned if he's going to get his hands on Stiles.
The days drifted lazily by without anything particular to mark their passing, but I began to feel that something had changed with the departure of Evelyn Howard. Her presence had spelt security. But now that security had been removed, the air seemed rife with suspicion. A vague distrust of everyone and everything filled my mind. It was quite a relief to get a letter from Evie.
I've got a job as a nurse in the hospital in Midlingham. It's only 14 miles from Stiles, and I can be over in half an hour if I'm needed. Please keep an eye on Emily, Captain Hastings, and let me know if she shows any sign of a change of heart. Sooner or later, she must see that devil for what he is, and realise what a fool he's made of her.
A spell of extraordinarily hot weather set in. Mary Cavendish went off for longer and longer expeditions with Dr. Bauerstein. What could she possibly see in the fellow? On the 16th, which was a Monday, there was a charity concert in the village hall.
We've all got to rally round. The mater wants to make a real splash with this one.
We spent all day arranging and decorating the place. Supper was served early, but we all had rather a scramble to be ready on time. And before the meal was over, the car was waiting at the door.
But, ma'am, you haven't had your medicine.
Oh, don't bother me with that now, Dorcas.
Dr. Wilkins said that on no account was you to miss taking it, ma'am. He was most insistent.
It will do me no harm to go without it for once. I've more important things to attend to.
The really important thing was a patriotic poem which Mrs. Inglethorpe delivered with considerable gusto.
Who's for the trench? Are you, my laddie? Who'll follow French? Will you, my laddie? Who's fretting to begin? Who's going to win? And who wants to save his skin? Do you, my laddie?
Of course, it was all a tremendous success. Cynthia took part in some of the tableaux and looked quite stunningly pretty.
No, I'm not coming back to Stiles tonight, Captain Hastings. I've already arranged to stay with some friends.
The following morning, Mrs. Inglethorpe kept to her room, saying she was overtired. Mary Cavendish said she was going off somewhere with Dr. Bauerstein. I felt rather at a loose end.
Why don't we pay a surprise visit to Cynthia in her dispensary? We could take the trap since the mater won't be using it.
Well, what a lot of bottles. Do you really know what's in them all?
Oh, for goodness sake, say something original. Every single person who comes here says that. And the next thing they say is...
How many people have you poisoned? I said it the first time we met.
If you really knew how fatally easy it is to poison somebody by mistake, you wouldn't joke about it. We have to be very careful who we let loose in here.
So, where do you keep all these poisons of yours?
In the little cupboard by the window. Ah. And in the one next to it, there are all kinds of secret treats.
Ah, chocolate biscuits and the remains of a seed cake.
We can have tea out on the balcony. It's a lovely day and there's a beautiful view along the river.
I'll join you in a moment.
The view wasn't all that remarkable, but it was a warm afternoon, the sun was shining, and it was pleasant to have Cynthia to myself for a moment or two.
Where on earth has Lawrence got to? His tea will be getting cold. Lawrence, what are you doing? Come and have your tea.
Sorry, just taking a look around. Fascinating place.
Fortunately, Lawrence went off to see a friend after tea, and Cynthia and I took the trap back to Stiles. As we drove through the village, I remembered I needed some stamps. As I was coming out of the post office, I cannoned into a little man who was just entering.
Oh, la la.
A little man with a head exactly the shape of an egg and a stiff military moustache.
Ah, mon ami Hastings! Oh, I cannot believe it! What a marvellous surprise to see you here!
Poirot! Miss Murdoch, this is my old friend Hercule Poirot. I haven't seen him for years, and here he is in Stiles St. Mary.
Oh, we all know Monsieur Poirot, but I'd no idea he was a friend of yours.
I have met Mademoiselle Cynthia many times with the good Madame Inglethorpe.
You know Mrs. Inglethorpe?
Oh, yes, my friend. Oh. It is by her charity that I am here.
Oh, how's that?
When the Germans invaded Belgium, I joined the resistance. But I was forced to take refuge in France and then made my way to your country. I had heard that Madame Ingethorpe had given shelter to a number of my compatriots in this village, and I came here. She made me welcome and found a room for me in the house she had taken for Belgian refugees. I shall be eternally grateful to her.
Oh, you must tell me the whole story. I shall come and see you as soon as possible. It'll be just like old times.
I shall look forward to it, my friend.
Goodbye, Monsieur Poirot.
Goodbye, mademoiselle.
He's such a dear little man. How did you come to meet him?
I needed no encouragement, and all the way back I regaled her with stories of my old friend. The heat of the day still lingered at Stiles Court when we returned that evening. As we walked into the house, Mrs. Inglethorpe came out of her boudoir. She looked flushed and upset.
Are you all right, Aunt Emily? Is there something the matter?
Oh, certainly not. Why should there be? Dorcas! Oh, Dorcas.
Yes, madam.
Can you find me some stamps and bring them up to my bedroom?
Yes, ma'am. But don't you think you ought to rest? You're looking very tired.
I must not fuss, Dorcas. I need to finish my letters in time to catch the post. Have you lighted the fire in my room, as I told you to?
Yes, madam.
Good. Well, I shall go to bed directly after supper.
Yes, ma'am.
Goodness gracious. I wonder what's up.
Well, Mrs. Inglethorpe does look a bit grim, but I suppose it's none of our business. Do you think there's time for a quick game of tennis before supper?
I'm sure there is. My racket's in the conservatory. I'll go and get it.
Mine's in my room. I'll see you on the court.
Oh, good evening, Captain Hastings.
Good evening. Did you have a pleasant walk with Dr. Ballister?
I didn't go, as it happens. Do you know where Mrs. Inglethorpe is?
She's in her boudoir, I believe.
I must speak to her.
She looked as if she was nerving herself for a particularly grim encounter. As I was making my way towards the tennis court a few minutes later, I couldn't help overhearing a scrap of conversation from the open window of Mrs. Inglethorpe's boudoir.
Then you won't show it to me.
My dear Mary, it has nothing to do with that.
In that case, you can show it.
There is nothing in it that concerns you.
Of course, I might have known you would shield him.
Fascinating though it all was, I could hardly stand and listen to a private conversation, and Cynthia was waiting for me on the tennis court.
I say, there's been the most frightful row. I got it all out of Dorcas.
What kind of row?
Between Aunt Emily and Inglethorpe.
What about?
Well, she's obviously found him out at last. Hmm. And she was making it very clear that she wasn't going to let him get away with it.
Get away with what?
Dorcas doesn't know exactly. She just happened to be near the door. Hmm. I'm praying that Aunt Emily will give him his marching orders and never speak to him again.
Supper was a distinctly chilly affair. John sat there in stony silence. Mary appeared nervous and agitated. Lawrence gazed abstractedly into space, and Inglethorpe, who as a rule fussed over his wife with little attentions, sat there staring gloomily down into his big black beard.
Mary, will you send my coffee into the boudoir? I've just got 5 minutes to catch the post.
Cynthia and I went and sat by the open window in the drawing-room.
Do you young people want the lamps on, or do you prefer to sit here in the twilight?
Oh, I'd much rather watch it growing dark.
Will you take Emily her coffee, Cynthia? I'll pour it.
Do not trouble yourself, Mary. I'll pour it.
As you wish, Mr. Inglethorpe. Oh, it's almost too hot. We shall have a thunderstorm.
What on earth can that be at this time of night?
Of course it had to be Dr. Bauerstein, who spun some cock-and-bull story about falling into a pond while trying to get at a rare species of fern. His trousers were thick with mud, and he looked completely ludicrous. But Mary seemed quite unperturbed, and John was remarkably affable.
You must sit down and have a coffee and tell us all about it.
Cynthia!
Yes, Aunt Emily?
Carry my dispatch case up for me, will you? I'm going to bed.
Yes, Aunt Emily? Have you finished your coffee?
No, I haven't touched it yet. I'll take it up with me. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
The evening had been completely spoiled by the wretched Bauerstein. It seemed as if he would never go. But eventually he rose and prepared to take his leave.
I'll walk down to the village with you, Doctor. I must have a word with our agent about the estate accounts before I go to bed. There's no need for anyone to wait up, John. I take the latchkey with me.
As he went out, there was a clap of thunder, and he looked more than ever like the Demon King in a pantomime. But as the summer storm drew nearer, I felt a strange premonition of evil, of some fate that was to break in on us and change Stiles Court forever.
What is it? What's the matter? No, come in, for goodness sake. Lawrence, what is it?
It's Mother. She seems to be having some kind of fit, but she's locked herself in her room.
I sprang out of bed at once and followed Lawrence along the gallery to the right wing of the house. The servants were standing around in a state of awe-stricken excitement.
Oh, Hastings, what should we do? Oh, the door's either locked or bolted.
Oh, poor mistress. Why don't you try going through Mr. Inglethorpe's room, sir?
Of course, Dorcas. Why didn't I think of that?
Where is Inglethorpe, anyway?
Oh, God only knows. Let's hope his door's not locked.
His bed's not been slept in. Where the devil has he got to?
Oh, the connecting door's locked on the other side.
She must be in agony.
Isn't there a connecting door to Cynthia's room?
It's always kept locked, sir.
Well, it's still worth trying. Come on.
Mary?
Cynthia's sound asleep. I've been trying to wake her for ages. It's no good trying the connecting door, Lawrence. It's locked.
She was dressed ready for work in her land volunteer's smock. I realised that it must be 5 o'clock, much later than I had thought.
There's nothing for it. We'll have to break in. The door from Inglethorpe's room is probably our best bet.
Dorcas, go and tell Bailey to get the trap and fetch Dr. Wilkins at once.
Yes, Mr. Lawrence.
The door looks pretty solid to me, but the two of us ought to be able to manage it. Again. And again.
She's having convulsions of some sort. Annie, go down to the dining room and get the brandy.
Yes, sir.
I'll unbolt the door to the corridor. Best not to have too many people standing around her, Lawrence. I'll go back to my... What's the matter, man?
Nothing. It's just...
His face was as white as chalk. The candle he held in his shaking hand was spluttering on the carpet. His eyes, petrified with terror, stared fixedly beyond me to some point on the wall.
Cynthia's all right now. It's all been a bit of a shock for her.
I was in such a deep sleep, I couldn't come out of it. Poor Aunt Emily.
Sorry to cause so much fuss. Stupid of me. Lock myself in.
Don't try to talk. Dr. Wilkins will be here soon. Just try to...
What on earth's the matter with her?
Let
me talk. I don't see it.
Alfred. Alfred.
Stand back from the bed, if you please.
But his expression gave us little cause for hope. I think we all knew in our hearts that there was nothing Dr. Bauerstein could do to help her.
I came too late. I am sorry.
But how did you come to be here?
I happened to be passing by the lodge gate when I met Bailey on his way to get the doctor from the village. Why did you not send for him earlier?
Mother was locked in her room. We didn't know what was the matter.
Please, sir. Dr. Wilkins is here.
Then bring him in here at once. And if the rest of you have no objection, I would like you to leave Dr. Wilkins and myself alone in here for a short while.
Of course.
Why is Dr. Bauerstein behaving so strangely, do you think?
I have a suspicion.
Yes?
He thinks Mrs. Inglethorpe may have been poisoned.
Poison? But that's impossible. It can't be true. Leave me alone for a minute or two, will you, Captain Hastings? Go down and join the others.
Where on earth is Inglethorpe? Has anyone seen him?
Well, he went down to the village last night to have a word with the land agent. I suppose he must have stayed there.
It's quite light already. What time is it?
Nearly 6 o'clock.
Mr. Cavendish, may I have a word?
Yes, Dr. Bauerstein.
Dr. Wilkins and I have examined the body, and we would like you to give your consent to a post-mortem.
Is that really necessary?
I am afraid that neither Dr. Wilkins nor I could give a death certificate under the present circumstances.
Well, then you leave me no alternative but to agree.
I think it would be best if the post-mortem were to take place later today. I have locked both Mrs. Inglethorpe's room and that of her husband. Here are the keys.
All my detective instincts were aroused. I hurried down to the library to consult Lawrence's old medical textbooks.
So that's where you've got to.
I'm sorry to have let you in for this terrible business, Hastings. It's hardly the kind of rescuer I had in mind.
Oh, don't you worry yourself about that. There's something I want to ask you.
Yeah.
You remember my speaking of my old friend, Hercule Poirot?
Mm.
He's staying at the Belgian house in the village. He used to be a famous detective.
Well?
I want you to let me call him in.
What, now, before the post-mortem?
The sooner the better, if there's been any foul play.
You surely can't believe that. It's just a wild notion of Bauerstein's. Poisons are his speciality. He sees them everywhere.
I only wish I could believe that, Lawrence, but I can't. You're sure there won't be any unnecessary scandal?
Poirot is discretion itself.
Then I leave it all in your hands. So if there has been foul play, there's not much doubt who's responsible.
I'll go straight away. I'll cut across the park.
Captain Hastings, I've only just heard about my poor Emily. Is it really true?
I'm afraid it is, Mr. Inglethorpe. But where have you been all this time? Everyone's looking for you.
I was going over the accounts late last night with the agent, Denby. And when I came to leave, I found I'd forgotten to take the latchkey. I did not wish to wake the household, so I spent the night there.
So how did you hear the news?
Wilkins knocked up Denby to tell him. But I must not stay here talking. Poor Emily, she must have overtaxed her strength.
Fortunately, he did not ask me where I was going, and in a few minutes I was sitting in Poirot's room at Leastways Cottage, telling him the whole story.
Now, one little moment, my friend. What makes you think this is a case of strychnine poisoning? Did Dr. Bauerstein say so?
No, I looked up the symptoms in a medical textbook of Lawrence's.
Good. Pray continue.
All the time I was speaking, he was making a careful and elaborate toilet. I fear I was not always as clear as I could have wished.
The mind is confused, is it not? You are agitated, you are excited. To that I attribute the circumstance that you have omitted one most important fact.
Oh, what's that?
You have not told me whether Mrs. Inglethorpe ate well last night.
I don't see why it's that important. As far as I can remember, she didn't eat very much at all. She was obviously upset and had lost her appetite. It was very natural.
Yes, as you say, it was natural. And now I am ready. Un moment, mon ami. You dressed in haste, and your tie is crooked. Allow me.
But you still haven't told me why it's so important to know whether Mrs. Inglethorpe ate well or not.
It is not my habit to explain such things until the end is reached. But in this case, I will make an exception. In looking through your friend's textbook, you probably did not observe that the effects of strychnine poisoning usually show themselves in about 1 hour. But with Mrs. Inglethorpe, they appear to have taken nearly 9 hours. A heavy meal might have retarded the effect. However, since you say that she ate very little, we are faced with a most curious circumstance.
Has Hastings explained to you, Monsieur Poirot, that we are most anxious to avoid any publicity?
I comprehend perfectly.
Good, then I'm at your service.
May I have the keys to the room in which your mother died?
Of course. Consider yourself free to go wherever you wish.
Once inside the room, Poirot relocked the door and put his attaché case down on a little round table, which promptly collapsed.
Oh, la la.
He darted about with the agility of a grasshopper, tried the bolts on both doors, found something which he scraped into a tiny envelope. On the chest of drawers was a tray with a spirit lamp and a small saucepan on it, containing some dark fluid, with an empty cup and saucer nearby.
Cocoa with, I think a little rum in it. And observe, on the floor, a smashed coffee cup.
Obviously someone trod on it.
Rather more than that, I think.
He went over to the mantelpiece, where he stood straightening the spill holders and ornaments, a trick of his when he was agitated.
That cup has been deliberately ground underfoot, almost to powder, either because it contains strychnine or, which is far more serious, because it did not contain strychnine.
He continued his examination for the best part of half an hour, and then he took out a little notebook.
We have found in this room 6 points of interest. Shall I enumerate them?
Please, go ahead.
1. The coffee cup. 2. A purple dispatch box containing papers which must be examined as quickly as possible, but which at present I have no authority to look at. 3. A stain on the carpet.
That may date from some time ago.
No. It is still perceptibly damp and smells of coffee. 4. A thread of some dark green fabric caught on the bolt of the door to Mademoiselle Cynthia's room.
You think that may be relevant?
At this stage, mon ami, everything is relevant. 5. This large splash of candle grease on the floor by the writing table.
That was probably Lawrence. He was carrying the only candle and he was very agitated. He kept on staring at something over on that wall.
Ah, that is very suggestive. But it was not his candle that did it. This is white grease. His candle, which is still on the dressing table, is pink.
So how do you account for it?
Oh, you must use your own natural faculties, mon ami.
And I suppose your sixth point is the cocoa.
No, the sixth point I shall keep to myself for the moment.
So, does this conclude your examination?
I think so. Unless there is something in the ashes of the fireplace. Oh, mon Dieu, there is. The forceps, Hastings. There. What do you make of that?
A tiny scrap of charred paper with the remains of someone's handwriting. Not much to go on.
Look more closely, my friend.
It might be a double L followed by an and.
And what does that suggest to you?
But, well, nothing much.
No, 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 no. Think of words ending in double L, my friend.
Call. Pull. Pill? Will.
Ah, exactly. Will.
Will and testament. It's the fragment of a burnt will.
I had rather expected to find something of the sort.
Oh.
And now, Hastings, we will go. I would like to have a little word with the housekeeper. Dorcas, is it not?
I took him down to the boudoir and went off to fetch Dorcas. When I returned, he had opened the French windows and was gazing down at the beds of begonias.
Ah, admirable. What symmetry. The neatness of the work of the gardeners rejoices the eye.
Dorcas is here.
Oh, no, do not begrudge me a moment's satisfaction, mon ami.
But surely it's more important that you speak to Dorcas.
But how do you know that these flower beds are not of equal importance? But let us talk with the good lady.
I just can't get over it, sir. She was a very good mistress to me.
Then I hope you will not object to answering a few questions. I put them to you with the full approval of Mr. Cavendish.
Yes, sir.
Let us begin with the events of yesterday afternoon. I understand that you heard your mistress having some sort of quarrel.
I just happened to be passing through the hall when I heard angry voices coming from this room.
And what time was this, mademoiselle?
It was about 4 o'clock, I think. You must understand that I didn't intend to listen, sir.
Oh, I do understand, Dorcas. Pray continue.
The door was shut, but the mistress was speaking very loud and clear. "You've lied to me and deceived me," she said. I didn't hear what Mr. Inglethorpe said in reply. He spoke a good deal lower than she did. But then she said, "Nothing you can say will make any difference. I see my duty clearly. You need not think that fear of publicity of scandal between husband and wife will deter me." And then I thought they were coming out, so I went off quickly.
Now, you are sure it was Mr. Inglethorpe's voice you heard?
Oh, yes, sir. Whose else could it be?
So, what happened next?
Well, it was 5 o'clock. Mrs. Inglethorpe rang the bell and asked me to bring her a cup of tea to the boudoir. She was looking dreadful. "Dorcas," she says to me, "I've had a great shock." "Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, ma'am," I says. "You'll feel better after a nice cup of tea." She had something in her hand. I don't know if it was a letter or just a piece of paper, but it had writing on it, and she kept staring at it, almost as if she couldn't believe what was written there. She whispered to herself, as if she'd forgotten I was in the room. "These few words," she says, "and everything's changed." And then she says, "Never trust a man, Dorcas. They're not worth it."
So what did you do then?
Well, I hurried off and got her a good strong cup of tea, and she thanked me. And then she says, "I don't know what to do. Scandal between husband and wife is a dreadful thing, Dorcas. I'd rather hush it up if I could. But Mrs. Cavendish came in just then, so she didn't say any more."
And what became of the letter, or whatever it was?
Well, I don't know, sir. She probably locked it up in that purple case of hers.
Is that where she normally kept important papers?
Yes, sir. She brought it down with her every morning and took it up every night.
Now tell me, did your mistress possess a green dress?
Oh, no, sir. She couldn't abide green.
Does anyone else in the house have a green dress?
Miss Cynthia has a green chiffon evening gown.
Oh, no, chiffon is not what I want. Let us pass on. Do you know whether your mistress had a sleeping powder last night?
Not last night, sir. The box was empty. She took the last one 2 days ago, and she didn't have any more made up.
Now, I understand that your mistress was busy writing letters yesterday evening. Can you give me any idea to whom they were addressed?
Well, I'm afraid I can't, sir. I was out in the evening. And as a result, Annie never cleared away the coffee cups after dinner. That's what happens when I'm not here to look after things.
Well, since they have been left, Dorcas, leave them a little longer. They might have something to tell us. Well, I have nothing more to ask. Thank you, Dorcas. Now, will you please send Annie here?
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
How did you know Mrs. Inglethorpe took sleeping powders?
I found an empty box in the washstand drawer in her bedroom. Oh. That was my sixth point of interest. And what was very curious was that there was no chemist's name on the label.
That's certainly very odd.
There may be a perfectly simple explanation. But here is Annie. Come in, mademoiselle, and please sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I want to ask you about the letters Mrs. Inglethorpe wrote last night. Can you remember any of the names and addresses?
There was one to a lawyer, Mr. Wells. I remember that. And there was one to Ross's, the caterers in Tadminster. And... oh, that's all I can remember.
You're sure?
Well, there was another. Oh, it slipped my memory.
Well, it will come back to you. Now, I want to ask you about the little saucepan in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room.
The one for the cocoa, sir?
Yes. Tell me, how did she take her cocoa?
Oh, with milk and one teaspoonful of sugar and two teaspoonfuls of rum.
And who took it to her room?
I did, sir.
And did you bring the saucepan straight up from the kitchen?
No, sir. There's not much room on the gas stove while dinner's cooking, so cook used to make the cocoa early. I put it on the table by the swing door and took it up to the mistress later.
So how long was the cocoa left standing on the table?
From about 7:15 until 8 when I took it up to her. And there was no salt in it, so it wasn't me.
What makes you think there was salt in it, Annie?
There was some on the tray, sir.
You noticed some salt on the tray?
Yes, sir. Common kitchen salt, it looked like. I couldn't see any in the cocoa, so I dusted the salt off with my apron and took the tray up. I hope I did right, sir.
But this explains everything. It was the cocoa and not the coffee that was poisoned.
Do you think that the cocoa contained strychnine?
Of course. The salt on the tray, what else could it have been?
It might have been salt.
Oh, for goodness sake, Poirot.
Oh, you are not pleased with me, mon ami.
My dear Poirot, it's not for me to dictate to you. You have a right to your opinion, as I have a right to mine.
Good. So, let us examine the coffee cups.
What on earth's the good of that now we know about the cocoa?
Come, my friend. Ne vous fâchez pas. Allow me to interest myself in the coffee cups, and I will respect your cocoa. Is it a bargain?
He was so quaintly humorous that I was forced to laugh. And so we went into the drawing-room, where the coffee cups had been left from the previous evening.
So Mrs. Cavendish stood by the tray and poured out. Then she came across to the window where you were sitting with Mademoiselle Cynthia. Yes, here are the cups. And the cup on the mantelpiece, half drunk. That would be the cup of Mr. Lawrence. And the one on the tray?
John Cavendish's. I saw him put it down there.
But where is the cup of Mr. Inglethorpe?
He doesn't take coffee.
Ah, good. Then all are accounted for.
With infinite care, he took a specimen from the grounds of each cup, sealing them in separate little test tubes, tasting each in turn. There was a strange expression on his face, half puzzlement and half relief.
I trust I'm not disturbing you, Monsieur Poirot, but breakfast is ready. Will you join us?
It would be a pleasure.
Can you tell me whether you think my mother died a natural death, or must we prepare ourselves for the worst?
I think you would do well not to deceive yourself with any false hopes. What are the views of the other members of your family?
My brother Lawrence is convinced we're all making a fuss about nothing.
And Mrs. Cavendish?
I haven't the least idea of my wife's views on the subject. But what the devil are we going to do about Inglethorpe? One's gorge rather rises at sitting down to eat with a man who's probably a murderer.
At breakfast there were no red eyes, no signs of secretly indulged grief. Inglethorpe acted the bereaved widower. Mary Cavendish was as enigmatic as a sphinx. Cynthia Murdoch appeared tired and ill, and greatly disconcerted Poirot when she told him she did not take sugar in her coffee.
Excuse me, Mr. Cavendish, but Mr. Wells is here to see you.
You'll show him into my study, will you, Dorcas?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Wells is my mother's lawyer. Perhaps you'd like to come with me, Monsieur Poirot, and you too, of course, Hastings.
This is a most unhappy business, Mr. Cavendish.
I'm sure you understand, Wells, that this must all be kept strictly private. We're still hoping there will turn out to be no need for an investigation of any kind.
I should be failing in my duty if I were to encourage you in that hope. There is no chance of sparing you the pain and publicity of an inquest. It's quite unavoidable in the absence of a doctor's certificate.
I suppose it is. When will it be?
Well, if you've no objection, I thought of Friday. That'll give us plenty of time after today's post-mortem. Oh, will that arrangement suit you?
Oh, yes. The sooner we get it over with, the better.
I need not tell you how distressed I am by the whole tragic affair.
Could you perhaps give us some help in solving the mystery, Mr. Wells?
I would be only too delighted to do so if it's in my power.
Apparently Mrs. Inglethorpe wrote a letter to you last night. You should have received it this morning.
I did, but it was merely a note asking me to call on her today as she wanted my advice on a matter of great importance. But she gave no hint as to what the matter might be.
That is a pity.
Mr. Wells, if it is not against professional etiquette, can you tell us who inherits Mrs. Inglethorpe's fortune in the event of her death?
If Mr. Cavendish does not object.
Not at all. Go ahead.
By her last will, dated April of last year, she left her entire fortune to her stepson, Mr. John Cavendish. It's possible, of course, that somewhere there may be a later will.
There is a later will, Mr. Wells.
Or rather, there was.
What do you mean? Where is it now?
This charred fragment is all that remains of it. Hastings and I found it in the grate of Mrs. Inglethorpe's bedroom earlier this morning.
But when did she make it?
Sometime yesterday afternoon, I believe. You can ask the gardeners who were working just outside the window. She must have called them in to witness it. There was mud on the step of the French window.
So that was why you were so interested in the begonias.
Mm-hmm.
But it is an extraordinary coincidence she should make a new will on the day of her death.
Not that extraordinary, surely.
What do you mean by that?
But you told me that your stepmother had a violent quarrel with somebody yesterday afternoon. And in consequence, she might well have made another will.
Good Lord.
What's all that noise?
It's Evelyn Howard. She's come back.
Well, in that case, since I'm sure you'll want to speak to her, let's take a short break. I need to examine some of the papers in your mother's room.
Thank you, Wells. Perhaps you would care to come with me, Monsieur Poirot.
I'd just come off duty when I heard the news. Hired a car. Quickest way to get here.
I'll get Dorcas to find you some breakfast. Evie, this is Monsieur Poirot. He's helping us.
Helping you do what?
Investigate my mother's death.
Nothing to investigate. Why isn't Inglethorpe in prison?
I can hardly drag him down to the police station by the scruff of the neck.
Well, find out how he did it. There's a soaked fly papers. Ask Cook if she's missed any.
I'll make a point of it.
Mademoiselle, may I ask a favour of you?
Ask away.
I want to be able to count on your help.
I'll help you to hang Alfred Inglethorpe with pleasure.
Oh, believe me, if Mr. Inglethorpe is the man, I will hang him as high as Haman. But I must ask you to trust me. Your help will be invaluable, and I will tell you why. Because in all this house, yours are the only eyes that have wept.
I watched over her, you see. I guarded her from the rest of them. And then this scoundrel came along and all my years of devotion went for nothing.
Will you come up to my stepmother's room, Monsieur Poirot? Mm-hmm. Dorcas says Mr. Wells is ready to go through the papers in her dispatch case, and I believe you still have the keys.
If you will permit me, Mr. Wells, I locked it earlier this morning as a precaution.
That's very odd.
What is odd, Mr. Wells?
The case is unlocked.
Impossible.
Well, see for yourself.
Oh, the lock has evidently been forced.
But the door was locked.
I'm afraid that most of the keys to the rooms in this corridor would have fitted it.
Fool that I am, I should never have left the case out of my hands.
He walked over to the mantelpiece. His hands were trembling violently as they mechanically straightened the vases of paper spills.
There was something in that case which linked the murderer to the crime. It was obviously vital that it should be destroyed. But it was a great risk for the murderer to take.
What do you think it could have been?
A document of some kind. Perhaps the paper that Dorcas saw in Mrs. Inglethorpe's hand. And now, imbecile that I am, I have allowed it to be snatched away. The good lady was very generous to us Belgians, and I am greatly in debt to her. And now, through my thoughtlessness, her murderer may never be brought to justice.
Extraordinary little friend, Captain Hastings. He's just rushed past me like a mad bull.
Oh, he's rather upset about something. Tell me, have Mr. Inglethorpe and Miss Howard run into one another since she came back?
John's been trying to keep them apart, I think.
I can't imagine Inglethorpe's very keen to see her again.
Do you think it would be such a disaster if they did meet?
Well, don't you?
No. I should like to see a really good flare-up. It would clear the air. At present, we're all thinking too much and saying too little. Oh, but here comes your friend. I shall leave him to you. Au revoir, Monsieur Poirot.
Au revoir, madame. Well, at least I have alerted everyone, Hastings. The servants will know now what to look for.
But is this wise, Poirot? Hmm? Surely you don't want the whole house to know that someone has broken into Mrs. Inglethorpe's dispatch case? Aren't you playing into the murderer's hands?
You think so, Hastings?
I'm sure of it.
Oh, very well, my friend. I will be guided by you.
Unfortunately, it's rather too late now.
You may be right.
Are you leaving so soon, Monsieur Poirot?
Yes, mademoiselle. I am going back to my cottage to put my little grey cells to work on the problem.
What a funny way to put it.
But there is something I would like to ask you, Mademoiselle Cynthia.
Yes? What is it?
In the drawer of the washstand in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room, I discovered an empty box which had contained sleeping powders.
Yes?
Did you make them up for her, mademoiselle?
Yes, I did.
Can you tell me what they were? Sulfonyl? Veronyl?
No, they were bromide powders.
Thank you. I was curious, voyez-vous, because of the label on the box being blank.
I'm sure they were perfectly harmless.
I never doubted it. Come, Hastings. Au revoir, mademoiselle.
There can't really be very much doubt as to the identity of the murderer.
You think not?
It can only be Inglethorpe. It stands to reason.
And yet, my friend, there are certain points in his favour.
I can only think of one.
And what is that?
That he was not in the house last night.
On the contrary, you have chosen the one point that counts against him.
How's that?
If Mr. Inglethorpe knew that his wife would be poisoned, he would certainly have arranged to be away from the house.
So, if the coroner's jury returns a verdict of willful murder against Alfred Inglethorpe...
I should not allow it.
You would not allow it?
No, Hastings, I would not.
I say, Mr. Poirot...
Yes, what is it?
You remember me, Mr. Mace from the chemist's shop.
Of course, Mr. Mace.
Have you just come from the hall?
Yes, we have.
And is it true what they're saying, that Mrs. Inglethorpe has been poisoned?
That is for the doctors to decide.
It wasn't strychnine, was it?
If you have any information on that point, Mr. Mace, I think you should report it to the coroner.
In the days preceding the inquest, I saw remarkably little of Poirot. He spent most of his time taking long walks around the countryside, very uncharacteristic for a man who took such obsessive pride in the polish of his shoes.
You're in from the hall, aren't you?
Yes, I'm looking for a friend of mine, as a matter of fact.
That Belgian bloke?
Yes, that's the one.
He's been here, all right. The gentlemen from the Hall don't seem to be able to keep themselves away from Rake's farm.
Why? Do other gentlemen come this way, then?
One does. And more than one. Not that I'm naming any names, mind.
Is it possible that Mrs. Inglethorpe could have swallowed the poison by accident?
The inquest was heard in the Stylites Arms. Poirot and I sat together listening to the evidence of the toxicology expert witness, Mary's friend, Dr. Bauerstein.
I would consider it most unlikely. Strychnine is not used for domestic purposes, and there are restrictions placed on its sale.
Then could it have been administered in Mrs. Inglethorpe's after-dinner coffee?
It is possible, but strychnine is a fairly rapid drug in its action. The fact that the symptoms did not manifest themselves until nearly 4 o'clock in the morning would seem to point to the coffee having been drunk long after Mrs. Inglethorpe took it up with her.
I understand she was in the habit of drinking a cup of cocoa in the middle of the night. Could the strychnine have been administered in that?
Ah, now we're coming to it.
Cocoa could never conceal the bitter taste of strychnine. But to make certain, I took a sample of the cocoa remaining in the saucepan, and the analysis showed no trace of the poison.
What did I tell you, mon ami? Thank you, Dr. Bauerstein.
And then Lawrence Cavendish was called. He came up with a quite extraordinary suggestion.
Of course, I may be wrong, but it still seems to me that my stepmother's death might be accounted for by natural means.
And how do you make that out, Mr. Cavendish?
At the time of her death, and for some time before it, she was taking a tonic which contained strychnine. I believe there have been cases where the cumulative effect of the drug administered for some time has ended by causing death.
Why, I wondered, was Lawrence so anxious to prove his stepmother's death was an accident? But Bauerstein made short work of his theory.
What Mr. Cavendish suggests is utterly impossible. Any doctor would tell you that. The whole thing is absurd.
And then Mary Cavendish was called. She looked pale, but very self-assured.
I was woken by my alarm clock at 4:45, as usual, and as I was getting dressed, I heard something being knocked over.
Would that have been the table in Mrs. Inglethorpe's bedroom?
I believe so. I opened the door, and Dorcas came running down the corridor to wake my husband.
I really do not think we need trouble you further on this aspect, Mrs. Cavendish, since we know all we need to know what happened next. But I should be obliged if you could tell us what you overheard of a particular quarrel on the day before.
Quarrel?
Yes, Mrs. Cavendish. I understand from the deposition of the maid, Annie, that you were sitting on the bench just outside the long window of the boudoir.
That is so.
And the boudoir window was open, was it not?
Yes.
Then you cannot fail to hear the voices inside, since they were raised in anger. Will you repeat to us what you overheard of the quarrel?
I really do not remember hearing anything very much. I'm not in the habit of listening to private conversations.
Even so, you must have caught some word or phrase that made you realise it was a private conversation.
I remember Mrs. Inglethorpe saying something about causing a scandal between husband and wife.
Which corresponds to what I understand Dorcas heard. But although you realised it was a private conversation, you did not go away.
I caught the momentary gleam of her tawny eyes. I felt certain that she would willingly have torn him into little pieces, but she replied quietly enough.
I was very comfortable where I was. I fixed my mind on my book.
The coroner did not seem very satisfied with her reply, but he let it go at that. But then came the real sensation of the day, the evidence of Mr. Mace, the chemist.
Tell me, have you lately sold strychnine to any unauthorised person?
Yes, sir.
And when was this?
On Monday the 16th.
The day before Mrs. Inglethorpe's death. And will you tell us to whom you sold it?
To Mr. Inglethorpe.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Are you quite sure of that?
Quite sure.
Are you in the habit of selling strychnine indiscriminately over the counter?
No, sir. But seeing as it was Mr. Inglethorpe at the Hall, I thought there was no harm in it. He said it was to poison a dog.
Is it not customary for anyone purchasing poison to sign the book?
Yes, sir. Mr. Inglethorpe did so. I have the book here.
Mr. Inglethorpe, on Monday evening last, did you purchase strychnine for the purpose of poisoning a dog?
No, I did not. There is no dog at Stiles except for a sheepdog, which is in perfect health.
Do you deny that this is your signature in the chemist's poison book?
This is not my handwriting. It is not even remotely like my signature. Let me show you. There. Do you see? It is totally different.
Then what is your explanation for Mr. Mace's statement?
Mr. Mace must have been mistaken.
Mr. Inglethorpe, would you mind telling us where you were on the evening of Monday, July the 16th?
I cannot remember. I have an idea. I was out walking.
In which direction?
I cannot remember.
Did you meet anyone on your walk?
No.
Am I to take it that you declined to say where you were when Mr. Mace positively recognized you entering the chemist's shop?
If you like to take it that way, yes.
Does this imbecile want to be arrested?
I believe you had a discussion with your wife on Tuesday afternoon.
You have been misinformed. The whole story of the quarrel is absolutely untrue. I was absent from the house all afternoon.
Have you anyone who can testify to that?
You have my word.
There are two witnesses who will swear to having heard your disagreement with Mrs. Inglethorpe.
Those witnesses were mistaken.
Mrs. Inglethorpe, when your wife was on the point of death, she cried out, "Alfred! Alfred!" Why should she do that?
The room was dimly lit. My wife caught sight of Dr. Bauerstein. He wears a beard and is much of my height and build. She obviously mistook him for me and cried out to him.
But it is an idea, that.
I believe, Miss Inglethorpe, that it was you who poured out the coffee that evening and took the cup to your wife?
I poured it out, yes, but I did not take it to her. I was told that Dr. Bauerstein had arrived, and I put the coffee cup on the table in the hall while I went to talk to him. When I came back, the cup was gone.
Thank you, Mr. Inglethorpe.
Do you see that man sitting near the door?
The sharp, faced chap?
Yes. That is Detective Inspector Chap. Huh? He and his companion are both from Scotland Yard. Things are moving quickly, my friend.
And then came the verdict, though it was almost a foregone conclusion.
Willful murder against some person or persons unknown.
Nonsense! We all know who the murderer is, and he's standing there!
Well, if it isn't Monsieur Poirot.
There's no mistaking you, is there? This is my colleague, Inspector Summerhayes.
And this is my good friend, Captain Hastings.
Pleased to meet you, Captain.
How do you do?
How do you do, sir? You must have heard me speak of Monsieur Poirot, Summerhayes. We've worked together on the Abercrombie forgery case, and our friend here ran him to earth in Brussels. Long before the war, that was. And do you remember the so-called Baron Alterer? He thumbed his nose at half the police in Europe, but thanks to Monsieur Poirot, we nailed him in Antwerp.
I am sure there is no need to ask why you are here, gentlemen.
No, there's not. Pretty clear case, I should say.
There I differ from you.
Oh, come off it, monsieur. The whole thing's as clear as daylight.
Hold your horses, Summerhayes. If I'm not mistaken, you've got something up your sleeve, haven't you, Monsieur Poirot?
Well, let us say I am very anxious that Alfred Inglethorpe should not be arrested.
But it's as plain as the nose on your face.
If you do arrest him, the case will be dismissed at once.
Well, Monsieur Poirot, I'm prepared to take your word for it, but my superiors won't. Can't you give me a bit more to go on?
It can be done. I would have preferred to work in the dark for a little longer, but I can see that the word of a Belgian policeman whose day is past is not enough. Mm-hmm. Are you going at once to Stiles Court?
Just as soon as we've had a word with the coroner.
Then call for me at the cottage as soon as you have finished. We will go together.
But I still don't understand. If Inglethorpe is innocent, how do you account for him buying the strychnine?
Very simply. He did not buy it.
But Mace recognized him.
No, Mace saw a man with a black beard like Inglethorpe's and glasses like Inglethorpe's. He did not really know him. Why should he doubt that the man was not the genuine article?
But if that's the case, why did he not say where he was at 6 o'clock on Monday?
Can you not guess?
No. Can you?
Oh, yes. I have a little idea. Ah, but there is Shap. Let us go to Siles and hear what Alfred Inglethorpe has to say for himself when he is not taking the stand in court.
I have nothing to say.
But you are in grave danger, Mr. Inglethorpe. You are accused of murdering your wife, and these gentlemen have come from Scotland Yard.
Afternoon, Mr. Inglethorpe.
Will you not say where you were at 6 o'clock on Monday?
I will not. The accusation is monstrous.
Mr. Inglethorpe, I must warn you.
I beg you, Inspector. If Mr. Inglethorpe will not tell you, then I must speak for him.
How can you speak? You do not know.
The man who purchased strychnine at the chemist's shop cannot have been Mr. Inglethorpe, because at 6 o'clock on that day, he was escorting Mrs. Rakes back to her home at Abbey Farm. I can produce at least 5 witnesses who will swear they saw them together.
You really are the goods and no mistake. I'm much obliged to you, Monsieur Poirot.
But if that's the case, Mr. Inglethorpe, why on earth couldn't you say this at the inquest?
Because a most malicious rumour had been spread about me. And with my poor Emily not yet buried. Can you wonder I was anxious that no more lying rumours were started?
Between you and me, sir, I'd sooner have any amount of tales about me than be arrested for murder. And if it hadn't been for Monsieur Poirot here, you would have been as sure as eggs is eggs. So, perhaps we could now take a look at the scene of the crime.
Quick, Hastings, go upstairs to the other wing. Stand there, just this side of the baize door.
Right.
Do not move until I come.
And he followed the others upstairs. I went and took up my position and stood there for the next 20 minutes.
You have not left your post?
I have been here all the time. What exactly is this in aid of?
Did you perhaps hear a loud thump?
Nothing at all. Should I have done?
I have been very clumsy. I knocked over a table in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room.
I'm sure it's of no consequence. But I did remember something while I was standing there like an idiot. I should have told you before, Dr. Bauerstein was here on Tuesday night.
Huh? He was here on the night of the murder?
Yes, he took coffee with the rest of us.
Oh, but that changes everything. We must take Mr. Cavendish's car and go down to Tedminster at once.
So, now that Inglethorpe's out of the running, where do we go from here?
Is there no one you yourself suspect, mon ami?
Well, you probably think this far-fetched, but I can't help worrying about Evelyn Howard's fanatical hatred of Inglethorpe. You don't think she could have tried to poison him and that Mrs. Inglethorpe somehow got hold of it by mistake?
But Miss Howard had been away from Stiles for more than a week. It is hardly a very plausible theory.
So I suppose that leaves us with John and Lawrence. But I can hardly believe...
You did not think there was something rather strange about Lawrence's theory concerning his mother's tonic?
It was quite a reasonable suggestion for a layman.
But Lawrence Cavendish is not a layman. He is trained as a doctor. Why should he be the only one to suggest that his mother died of natural causes?
It is a bit odd, I admit.
And Mary Cavendish was certainly not telling all that she knew about the conversation she overheard. Is she trying to protect someone? Or is she perhaps trying to protect herself? Yeah, but here we are. There is something I must leave with the analytical chemist.
What?
A sample of the cocoa from the saucepan in Mrs. Inglethorpe's room.
But Dr. Bauerstein has already had it tested.
I know that, mon ami, but I have a fancy to have it analyzed again. And by the way, when you are next alone with Lawrence Cavendish, say to him... I have a message from Hercule Poirot. Find the extra coffee cup and you can rest in peace.
Needless to say, when I mentioned this to Lawrence, he hadn't the foggiest idea what I was talking about. The funeral of Mrs. Inglethorpe took place the following day. And to the great relief of all of us, her husband moved to the Stylites' Arms.
Excuse me, Captain Hastings.
Yes, Dorcas.
Will you be seeing the Belgian gentleman today?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I'm expecting him here any minute.
He was particularly inquiring about a green dress. He seemed to think it was important.
You mean you found it?
Well, no, sir, but I have just remembered the young gentleman used to have a dressing-up box, and all kinds of old cast-offs found their way into it. It occurred to me there might be a green dress in there. It's up in the front attic.
A crimson kimono, a cardboard breastplate, a very threadbare shooting jacket.
What about this scarf? Could it be what we're looking for?
No. Quite the wrong shade. We are not looking for emerald green.
Scabbard? Bead necklace?
A blue cloak. Oh, look at this, my friend.
Blackbeard.
And observe, Hastings. It has been trimmed to make it look like the beard worn by Inglethorpe.
A good place to hide it. Apart from Dorcas, the only people who appear to have known about the dressing-up box are John and Lawrence.
And the beard is new. Everything else in the chest has been used over and over again, but this was obviously bought quite recently. I need someone to find out how it came here.
You could always ask John.
No, not John.
Miss Howard might know, or she could certainly find out.
An excellent idea. But I am in her black books because I prevented Inglethorpe being arrested. Can she be persuaded, I wonder?
Well, Monsieur Poirot, what do you want? Out with it. I'm busy.
Do you remember, mademoiselle, I once asked you to help me?
Yes, I do. And I told you I'd help you with pleasure to hang Inglethorpe.
Miss Howard, my friend Hastings told me of something you said that impressed me very much.
Well, what was that?
That if somebody close to you had been murdered, you would instantly know who had committed the crime.
And I suppose you think that's nonsense.
Not in the least.
And yet you don't believe me when I tell you it was Inglethorpe that killed poor Emily.
No, because you really do not believe that he did it. You are trying to shut out the name of the person your instinct tells you is the murderer.
No, that's not true.
I know you have too high a regard for justice to deceive yourself. Help me to unmask the real killer of your beloved Emily.
Yes, you are right. Nothing must be allowed to stand in the way of justice. Tell me what you want me to do.
Ah, Miss Murdoch, the very person I wanted to talk to. Monsieur Poirot wants to know if he can come and have a look round your dispensary.
Of course he can, but tell him I'm not there on Wednesdays. He's such a funny little man. The other day he made me take the brooch out of my tie and put it straight.
Yes, that kind of thing is rather an obsession with him.
Captain Hastings, you're always so kind and know such a lot. I want to ask your advice.
Go ahead.
You see, Aunt Emily always told me I should be provided for. I suppose she forgot or didn't think she would die so soon. But the long and short of it is, I'm not provided for. Do you think I ought to go away from here at once and stop living at Stiles?
Oh, good heavens, no. I'm sure they don't want to get rid of you.
Mrs. Cavendish does. She hates me. And so does he.
Oh, I'm quite sure you're wrong about Mary. And as for John...
Oh, I didn't mean John. I meant Lawrence. Not, of course, that I care whether he hates me or not. But he's been behaving so strangely lately and tries to avoid speaking to me. Rather horrid when no one loves you. I don't know what to do.
I know what you should do, Cynthia. Marry me.
Don't be silly.
I'm not being silly. I'm asking you to do me the honour of becoming my wife, Miss Murdoch.
You funny dear. It's perfectly sweet of you, but you know you don't really want to.
Yes, I do. And there's nothing to laugh at. I don't see anything funny about a proposal.
No, indeed. But next time somebody might accept you. Good morning, Captain Hastings. And thank you. You've cheered me up very much.
Thinking over our little interview, it all struck me as being profoundly unsatisfactory. After lunch, I went for a stroll through the woods and sat down under an old beech tree trying to work out the whole mystery. In a couple of minutes, I was sound asleep.
It's no concern of yours, anyway.
John and Mary Cavendish were standing only a few feet away,
totally unaware that I was there.
I won't have it, Mary. Do you understand?
You won't have it? What right do you think you have to criticise my conduct?
It's the talk of the village. My mother was buried only yesterday and you spent all your time gadding about with that fellow.
Oh, well, if it's only village gossip you're worrying about.
Do you intend to go on seeing Bauerstein?
If I choose. I deny your right to criticise my actions. Do you think I don't know what you're up to?
What do you mean?
You know very well what I mean.
Mary, are you in love with this Bauerstein fellow?
Perhaps. But if I am, it is no concern of yours.
I stood there, not daring to make a move until Mary had gone. And then I stepped ostentatiously forward. John took it for granted that I'd only just come on the scene.
Oh, hello, Hastings. Have you been seeing the little fellow back to his cottage? Is he getting any further, do you think?
Well, if he is, he's keeping it to himself.
Well, is he really any good, do you think?
He was considered one of the finest detectives of his day.
Oh, it's all such a nightmare. Scotland Yard men in and out of the house all the time. They were there again this morning. Screaming headlines in every paper in the country. There was a whole crowd of journalists outside the lodge this morning. It's like being in an exhibit in the Chamber of Horrors. I don't know whether I shall ever be able to hold my head up again.
It'll pass. These things always do.
But who could have done it? It's horrible to think that now Inglethorpe's out of it, it can only be one of us.
But how could it be?
Well, that's just it. There isn't anyone.
You don't think...
Yes?
You don't think it could be Bauerstein?
But what possible interest could he have in Mother's death?
I've no idea, but Poirot got very excited when he heard Bauerstein had been at Stiles when the coffee was poured out. And then again, it might have been the cocoa. I know for a fact that Poirot is not at all happy about the analysis Bauerstein had carried out.
But cocoa couldn't have concealed the taste of strychnine.
We've only got Bauerstein's word for that. And after all, he knows more about poisons than anyone else in the country. He could have used something else.
Even so, I'm damned if I can see what his motive could have been. And in any case, he would have needed an accomplice.
John went off back towards the house. And then a terrible thought struck me. Could Bauerstein's accomplice have been Mary? Had Mrs. Inglethorpe found out that she was having an affair with Bauerstein and threatened to tell John all about it? Was that why she'd been killed? Or had Mary cold-bloodedly used Bauerstein to get rid of a woman who was in her way?
Two married women shouldn't have to share the same house.
I must confess the whole idea made me feel rather sick. And I remembered what Mary had said on the very first afternoon we met.
Not in a case of poisoning. Isn't that supposed to be the woman's weapon?
I was in a very gloomy state of mind all the way back to Stiles. As I reached the garden, Evie came rushing towards me.
Captain! Captain! Have you heard the news?
What news, Evie?
About Bauerstein.
What's happened to him?
He's been arrested.
Good Lord.
If you ask me, they've got the wrong black beard.
It does not surprise me. After all, we are only 4 miles from the coast.
What has that got to do with it?
Well, surely it is obvious, mon ami. Well,
no doubt I am very dense, but I cannot see what the proximity of the coast has to do with the murder of Mrs. Inglethorpe.
Unless the good Inspector Japp has taken leave of his senses, the matter has nothing to do with Mrs. Inglethorpe.
Then why has Bauerstein been arrested?
For espionage, mon ami. What else?
You mean he's a German spy?
What, did you not suspect it?
The idea never entered my head.
It did not strike you as peculiar that a famous London doctor should bury himself in a little village like this and should be in the habit of walking about at all hours of the night?
You mean that's how he came to fall in the pond on the night of the murder?
Which is very likely, mon ami. And he is, of course, a German by birth.
Oh, the blackguard.
No, not at all. He is, on the contrary, a patriot. And despite the fact that Belgium has been devastated by his fellow countrymen, I must confess, I rather admire his courage.
This is the man with whom Mary Cavendish has been wandering about all over the place.
Yes. I fancy he found her very useful. So long as everyone was gossiping about the pair of them, no one paid much attention to what Bauerstein was really doing.
Then, do you think he never really cared for her?
Oh, that I cannot say, but I will tell you one thing.
What's that?
I do not believe Mrs. Cavendish cares or has ever cared one jot about Dr. Bauerstein.
Do you really think that?
I'm quite sure of it. And I will tell you why.
Yes?
Because she cares for someone else.
What did he mean? I'm not a vain man where women are concerned.
but in spite of myself, an agreeable warmth spread over me.
We must waste no more time and hurry on to the house. I have had a message from Miss Howard. She has discovered something.
Here you are, Monsieur Poirot. Is this what you were looking for?
I believe it is. Where did you find it, mademoiselle?
On top of a wardrobe. But I've no time to stand here chatting. Meeting of the Charities Committee at the Village Hall and Lady Tadminster's in the chair. Wouldn't do to keep her waiting.
Sheet of brown paper. Not very much to get excited about.
Ah, but do you not see the label?
Mrs. Parkson, theatrical costumiers. Is that what the beard came in?
So it would seem. And it is addressed to an... Is it J. Cavendish or is it an L?
Well, it's certainly not a J. What was it doing on top of the wardrobe?
Ah, Monsieur Poirot. Nobody told me you were in the house. Good morning, Captain Hastings.
Good morning, Inspector.
What's that you got there? Theatrical costumiers, eh? Where did this come from?
Miss Howard found it on top of a wardrobe.
Have you any objection to my hanging on to this, Monsieur Poirot?
None at all, Inspector. It has told me all I wish to know. How is the investigation progressing?
Oh, we've turned up a thing or two. As a matter of fact, we've come across another will.
A will?
Dated before Mrs. Inglethorpe's marriage, and leaving her entire fortune to Mr. Inglethorpe.
But why did her solicitor not know of this?
That's a funny thing about it. It was written on one of those printed will forms.
And where did you find it, Inspector?
In the desk in the boudoir.
But I understood that Mr. Wells had gone through all Mrs. Inglethorpe's papers very carefully.
You must have missed it. We found it stuffed into one of the drawers at the back. But I'd better be off, if you'll excuse me. Things are beginning to warm up. Goodbye, Mr. Poirot, Captain Hastings.
Goodbye, Inspector.
The poor chap. He has no method. Nevertheless, it is strange about the will. Ah, but here is the good Dorcas. A little word with you, mademoiselle, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Poirot.
Tell me, on the day before the tragedy, did anything go wrong with Mrs. Inglethorpe's bell?
Oh, as a matter of fact, it did. Though I don't know how you came to hear of it. A mouse or some such must have nibbled the wire through. The man came and put it right on Tuesday.
Thank you, mademoiselle. That is all I wanted to know.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Poirot.
One should never ask for outside proof. But the flesh is weak, and it is good to know one is on the right track. I am like a giant refreshed.
A very small giant.
Your little friend seems very pleased with himself. What's it all about?
I really haven't the faintest idea.
Is he quite mad?
I believe there's method in his madness.
Captain Hastings, I need to talk to you. Will you come into the garden?
Oh, of course, I'd be only too happy.
Tell me, do you think my husband and I are happy together?
I don't think it's any of my business to have an opinion.
Well, whether it's your business or not, I will tell you that we are not happy. You don't know anything about me, do you?
Well, no, not really.
My father was English, but my mother was Russian.
Ah, now I understand.
What do you understand?
Well, there's a hint of something, rather different about you.
My mother was very beautiful, I believe. But she died when I was a little child. I was told she'd taken an overdose of sleeping pills by accident. My father was in the consular service. I went all over the world with him. It was a splendid life, and I loved it.
I can understand that.
And then my father died. He left me badly off, and I had to go and live with some old aunts in Yorkshire. The deadly monotony of life with them was getting too much for me, and then I met John. I wasn't in the least in love with him. I married him to get away from the terrible boredom of my existence.
I see.
Don't misunderstand me. I was quite honest with him. I told him that I liked him very much and that I hoped to come to like him more. I'm sure he cared for me at first, but we drifted apart. It is not a pleasant thing for me to admit, but he tired of me very soon.
Oh, but surely...
Not that it matters now. I believe we may have come to the parting of the ways. I'm not going to remain at Stiles.
And John?
I've no idea what he intends to do.
You're going to leave him?
I want to be free, Captain Hastings. You can have no idea what a prison this place has been to me.
I hope you won't do anything rash.
Rash?
You know that Dr. Bauerstein has been arrested.
My husband was so kind as to break the news to me this morning.
So, what do you think?
What should I think? Apparently he's a German spy, or so one of the gardeners told John. But I must go back to the house now. Thank you for listening to me so patiently.
Just before tea time, I went to look for Poirot and was told that he'd gone to Cynthia Murdoch's dispensary. But he knew very well that Wednesday was her day off. What on earth was happening to the man?
I say, Hastings, if you happen to see your Belgian friend...
Yes, Lawrence?
Will you tell him I think I've found the extra coffee cup?
I must admit I've forgotten all about it. By the end of the afternoon, Poirot had returned. I found him sitting by the table in his cottage, his head buried in his hands.
Ah, to speak or not to speak, that is the question, as your great poet puts it.
What on earth are you talking about?
The most serious of all things hangs in the balance.
And what is that?
A woman's happiness. The moment has come, and I do not know what to do.
I see. By the way, Lawrence asked me to tell you he thinks he's found the extra coffee cup.
Ah, that is good. He has more intelligence than would appear, this long-faced Monsieur Lawrence. Now, there is something on which I need your opinion. Are you a good judge of finger marks?
Well, I know that none are ever alike.
Then take a look at these. I have numbered the photographs 1, 2, and 3. Will you describe them to me?
Number one, I would guess, is a man's fingerprint, that of the index finger. Number two is a lady's, quite different in every way. Number three, well, it's all rather confused, but there are two very distinct prints which appear to be the same as the man's finger in number one.
You are sure of that?
As sure as I can be.
Good. Now, number one is the fingerprint of Lawrence Cavendish. Hmm. Number two, that of Mademoiselle Cynthia, and number three is the highly magnified surface of a small bottle in the poison cupboard of the dispensary at Tadminster.
You mean you deliberately went there when you knew Cynthia Murdoch wouldn't be around? But Lawrence was never near the poison cupboard on the day we were there. We stayed together all the time.
Are you certain of that?
No, no. I remember now. Cynthia and I were having tea out on the balcony, and she suddenly realised Lawrence wasn't with us and called out to him to join us. But it could only have been for a moment.
Long enough.
Long enough for what?
Long enough for a man who had once studied medicine to gratify a very natural interest.
What was in that particular bottle?
Hydrochloride of strychnine.
Good Lord.
There is far too much strychnine in this case. Strychnine in Mrs. Inglethorpe's tonic, strychnine sold across the counter to someone wearing a false beard, and now we have a strychnine bottle handled by Lawrence Cavendish. It is all very confusing. And as you know, I do not like confusion. Entrez.
I hope you will forgive my intruding, but they told me that you were here with Monsieur Poirot, Captain Hastings, and I thought I would call for you.
Oh, madame, I hoped you had called to honour me with a visit.
I would be only too happy to come whenever you wish.
Mm, if you should ever need a father confessor, madame, remember that Papa Poirot is always at your service.
I won't forget.